everyone. Welcome on back to the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me, as per the usual, Mr. Jeff Wilder.
Impressive.
Most and impressive. Mr. Drew... Damn it, and Mr. Drew Bishop.
You ruined the line, man. I was waiting for him.
I did. I thought it's he was... I always confuse the Vader impressive with the Green Goblin impressive. I always forget that there's a second part to it, and I just always remember Defoe going, impressive. I love that version.
That's great.
I Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin is probably my second. He's either two or three on my favorite Marvel villains of all time. And I do count the Sam Raimi movies as part of the MCU.
He was pretty good. I got to give you that. He was pretty good as Green Goblin.
Yeah, the only one better is, oddly enough, the one in the movie right after him because, you know, that's just a perfect casting.
Dr. Octopus?
Yeah, and whose name escapes me. Save me.
Kieran Hines.
Alfred Molina. Yep. Absolutely. Alfred Molina was like the beginning of the overcasting Marvel villains, where you just pick someone way better than comic book movies and put them in one. Anyway,
I swear, I'm still thinking about it, and I'm still seeing Kieran Hines.
Kieran Hines, yeah,
his face in my mind. That's weird.
Is that how you say his name, by the way?
I assume because it's Gaelic, but I genuinely don't know.
I don't either because I remember watching him on Rome, and I never had any idea how to say his name.
Yeah, I just assumed because it's definitely a Gaelic name, so.
Okay, but we all participated in and had varying degrees of success at our own hyperspace trial. I think the first one of season two.
Second, I think. I believe
Jacksonville
there was
got us.
No, I think there was one last weekend.
Oh, okay.
A small one last weekend.
Yeah, all right. I guess we missed that one. We'll have to look it up at some point. But we're going to talk about the Game Castle Mountain View trial, the Jacksonville hyperspace trial, and the Game Shop Nuance, which is Nebraska Bellevue hyperspace trial. First off, we'll start with Drew. What list did you take, and where did you finish?
Sure. So I took Soontir naked, Darth Vader with afterburners, and then two barrage rocket bombers. And I finished in sixth place.
Jeff?
Well, first things first, I just want to ask if there's anybody at Drew's place of employment that we should talk to about his finish, or is that...
No, that's fine. We're good to go.
I went 0-2 and dropped after experiencing soap bubble TIE fighters.
I think the way you explained it was that you had 8 TIE fighters one-shotted out from under you holding focus tokens?
In 2 games, yeah.
Yep.
Not always focused, but yes.
Okay, I had understood it to be they were always modified somehow.
No, not always focused. But still, 8 TIE fighters. And by the way, that's not counting Iden.
Jesus.
So, yeah, it was remarkable. And the really remarkable thing is if you look at my overall evades for the 2 games, it wouldn't be that far below the mean because when I did roll an evade, I rolled 3 at a time.
Oh.
So I'd have 1 damage incoming, I'd roll 3 evades.
Yeah.
Then I'd have hit crit incoming and roll 3 blanks.
Jesus.
So, yeah.
That you guys know how I feel about green dice.
Man, it was brutal.
I took a somewhat updated version of my anime imports list, Lando Wedge, and I replaced Dutch Yander with Jake Farrell, which will not be happening again. And I think I ended somewhere around 24 or 26, where I went 3-3 for the event.
But you started out 3-0, right?
I lost my first game to a gentleman running Vader Shirano, and it was very close. I missed killing Shirano and winning that game by 1 hole.
Okay.
It also could have ended actually and I don't know if this is possible. I think it could have ended in where we kill each other. because if Shirano had shot back and missed killing by Wedge, my Wedge got crit chained and one tapped. But it could have been that if I had killed his Shirano and then chased down Vader and he had just Talon rolled into me with a standing target lock, we could have just killed each other. And I think at that point it's a draw, right?
Shirano is 5 and Wedge is 6.
So... No. I'm saying that if I had killed Shirano instead of him jacking me up and that I had proceeded, because I was behind Vader running into Shirano.
Oh, I see.
So if I had gone through Shirano and then Vader and me had jousted off, Vader and my Wedge had jousted off, technically we could have killed each other for the draw, right?
No, so, there is no draw. What would have happened is you guys would have final salvoed with the ships that were left on the board.
There would not have been anything left.
No.
Full lip.
Yeah, go Jeff, take it away.
Yeah, so if there's no ships left, you would final salvo with your full list.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I actually feel like a draw would have been – a draw would have probably been the more fair end of that game.
Well, like it wouldn't have been a draw. Like, again, it's the final salvo means that one of you would have won. But it's what do the points look like on that?
Jeff? It was 200-200.
No. But I mean, like, for the final salvo, would both players get 200, right?
Correct.
And then one of them wins? Wow, that's interesting. That would have been better, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I mean that's as close to a draw as possible. But he would have had a five die final salvo against my 8. So I guess I should have ran away. But yeah, and then I won my next 3 games, Jeff, in pretty dominant fashion, except for one of them. I crushed 2 kind of Imperial salad lists, and I mean like not close. Because that's what that list kind of was built to do, was just destroy Imperial players.
Do you remember what the lists were?
Duchess Merrick, Ved Foslo, and Pierce Sabacc. And then the other one I don't remember. But what happened is I ran into back-to-back droid swarms in round 5 and 6. And I have next to no experience, just because no one I play with regularly flies them. And my list has a very serious problem focusing damage against something that can put out that many arcs.
Well,
network calculations is badass, right?
It's an amazing ability, and I called it the minute it came. I don't think anybody questioned that it was going to be good.
Well, I think that it's with knowing what to do. I don't think it was your list was unable to deal with the swarm. I think you were unable to deal with the swarm. As you said previously, you don't have any experience with it. I ran into the same issue, but upon seeing other people fly it, and I flew against 2 of them as well. There were, 3 or 4 Separatist lists? And the second time I encountered it, so like, the first time I encountered it, I lost Soontir and I lost a bomber and a half. And Vader was virtually untouched, and I had killed a single Vulture droid and got half damage on General Grievous. And I was like, oh crap, man, that was terrible. It's probably the worst game I flew all day next to the games that I lost. And then in the second game that I flew against them, obviously it was a different list, but it was still 7 ships. He got half points on a single TIE bomber, and I tabled him.
I also think that it needs to be said that, Drew, you're twice the player I am.
Oh, I don't know about that. Wedge and Lando is pretty good, even with Jake. But either way, it's. I think that is something interesting to talk about, because, you know, we have these sort of like pocket metas where we don't really deal with a whole lot of things. And I do think that going forward with hyperspace, the Separatists are going to be something to look at. But if you really practice against them, I mean, I don't know, man. I flew Vader into 5 of their arcs, and he took a single damage.
Well, we
2 damage.
Let's talk about why that is. Remember, Vader has one thing that Wedge and Lando don't.
This is also very true. And then as I watched Rick, who has been on the show before, in his top 4 match, lose to it. Vader got caught by, I think it was 4 ships, when he flew against it, and he was like, "Oh my, I've lost." And I was kind of sitting there, and I was like, "No, actually, you're fine." And he took two shields specifically because the guy was running. Gosh, what was it?
The crack shot. Captain Sear.
Sear with the crack shot. And other than that, Vader was untouched, and he was like, "Wow." And then the Vulture guy was like, "Okay, I've lost, right? Because Vader is still alive."
What I don't get is, in both those cases, okay, so somehow you take four or five three-die modified shots and don't take damage, which, I mean, you had to have rolled your ass off with evades.
Yeah, that's what I was pointing out.
But even so, my big question is, then how do you avoid getting blocked the next turn?
That is the key issue, and I actually want to talk about this too tonight. As far as Vader is concerned, because me running just afterburners, I really miss the fact that I had to spend my target lock to get the damage through.
Right.
And then I didn't have a target lock for the next like four turns in the game, trying to turn around. Mm-hmm. And you know, people might be saying like, "Oh man, you have afterburners, like just hard three and like boost." And it's like, well, when you're in the thick of it in the gas clouds and you know they're coming at you, you really have nowhere you can go. And I would much rather have the FCS. Like in every single one of my games, I only used afterburners when I either A, didn't need to, and it was just because, or I used it to like win more, right? Like Vader knew he had the shot, and it was like, okay, I'm gonna boost forward to get that extra attack die.
Right.
And I don't know if after playing that hyperspace, well, at least for hyperspace events, right? Extended, I think, is different. You do want afterburners in extended. But in hyperspace, is afterburners really needed on any ship? Like, maybe just Vader specifically.
I think the big benefit with Vader is the ability, you mentioned gas cloud. The ability to go through gas clouds, afterburners, and continue using his
action string
actions. I think that's huge. Gas clouds are just so common now.
Even people who don't need them are bringing them.
Are bringing them, agreed.
Yeah, 100%. But here's the other thing too. A lot of the guys that I was playing against who are well known, you know, they practice a lot, right? And of course, practice against the top meta stuff, which is Vader. They were just flying close to the gas clouds, and not having the FCS, you know, I wasn't on an average roll of hit, focus, blank. I wasn't about to spend the force or the target lock to get, you know, maybe the two damage and then shoot them through the gas cloud.
Right.
Right. So that was my big thing was, you know, people knew how to fly against me. It didn't really stop Vader, but you know, at the same time, right? Like that's the big trade-off, right? Oh, you can afterburners through the gas cloud. Well, if your opponent knows how to get around that, I mean, are you really going to be using afterburners all that much? Maybe when you're trying to turn around, right? Like you hard three boost and then next turn you're back in the fight. But you know, in those two turns, especially against gone to the tournament for the first time with a Vulture Swarm who may or may not know exactly what they're doing and stumble upon, you know, winning a lot. It's interesting that literally the next podcast that the Fly Better guys did was about pace of play. And I do feel like that is, I don't know if we want to go into it, but
I talked about it today offline. Pace of play is horrible.
It's a problem.
I watched several of the Sinker Swarm games, man, and they're averaging six turns a game.
Oh and my god. Like,
it's just horrible.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm not sure you ever answered how you avoided getting blocked. If you were in the arcs of four or five droids, how do you avoid getting blocked?
So the big thing that I did was a K turn. 4K or with Vader, I just bumped because the droids don't have a straight turnaround other than a 1K.
Right.
And most of them couldn't do it. And when they did do the two turnaround, Vader, you know, Vader bumps or doesn't bump. And then, of course, barrel rolls and is not getting shot at. And, like, there was no problem. But I did play some silliness with Soon Tier in the game that I did lose against the Vultures. I made a wrong decision with him, and I lost him. But having said that, you know, at the end of the day, I really think that, you know, even energy shell charges, as long as you've got force, you know, you engage them at range 2, you'll be just fine. And ships that don't have force, right, like Vince's with Lando and Wedge, you got to use that action efficiency and you just burn them down. Because that's the other thing, too. If you try to kill enough of them and they're like, oh, I'm going to keep my ship alive by spending all my calculate tokens. Well, now they don't have calculate tokens for energy shell charges and you'll survive anyways.
You must roll 2 evades.
You must. That's the thing about Vader and Fel that basically nobody else has. And I mean the Jedi don't have it either because nobody runs multiple Jedi without multiple 7B at this point. Like, we just don't have 3 evade dice, Drill. It's just not there.
Well, I do have 3 evade dice, and I don't roll like that.
Jeff, somebody put the hex on you, man.
I'm just saying, statistically, we could work out the math, and we put Vader at range 2 of 5 droids or 4 droids, and we work out the math, and I guarantee you Vader's half-pointed in an average thing.
Well, it should almost always happen.
I'm not saying that it's not good that it didn't happen to you. I'm just saying that it's pretty remarkable it didn't happen to you.
Yeah.
So here's the interesting thing. The Vulture Swarm list that did make the top 2 wasn't running energy shell charges, which was quite interesting.
No, that was weird.
And the second game that I did play was energy shell charges. And what is it? I played, I think, 4 or 5 games with against the Vulture Swarm now. And so, especially after this hyperspace tournament, I feel like I do know them a little bit. You just have to roll above average to even get, like, no, I'm dead serious, with an energy shell charge, because you're going to spend multiple calculate tokens on average to get those 3 hits.
It's turn an eyeball to a crit. Yes. So once you do 2 shields, anything else that comes through is a crit. That's major.
Right, but have you done the math on multiple energy shell charges, you know, being thrown, right? The average being hit focus blank. How many calculate tokens are you going to spend to try and get the shots off?
See, that's not the average. Hit focus blank is not an average roll. Hit focus is actually a little bit below an average roll. So interesting. We should do the math. We should do Gate of Storms, because I'm very curious about that. I have absolutely no doubt that the way that I rolled on Saturday, if I had taken, and I'm counting the times that I rolled 3 of 8s, right? If I take 5 energy shell charges against Vader at range 2, I would be destroyed. And to hear you say not that it didn't happen to you, but rather that it shouldn't happen, because that's sort of what you told Rick, that's remarkable to me. I don't think that the math bears that out.
So I didn't tell Rick because he was playing the game during it, but I think at the end of it, he realized, wow, you know, I'd survive, like, wow, that wasn't actually that bad. And I do feel like I walked out of all of my Separatist games thinking they need some way to reroll attack dice. But if they did, I mean, obviously they have target lock, but you're never going to see Vultures target lock and then, you know, survive next turn to, like, actually, you know, use the calculate. Without the ability to reroll attack dice, it's cool. It's kind of scary to go up against multiples, but, you know, a lot of the basic ships, like even the T-65 has boost, right? Like, I don't know. I think they're good for sure, but they're definitely they're not the end all be all.
I think you can outfly them. I'm not saying you can't outfly them. I'm saying that given the situation of ending up at range 2 and 4 or 5 arcs, I'm not saying that they can't be beaten by being outflown and everything. I would have loved to have seen just what they rolled and what you rolled is all.
Yeah. Right.
Because I think that you are underestimating what the average is on that kind of attack.
So let's go ahead and we'll look at Cool Stuff Jacksonville, just because, Jeff, I know you watched more than – you said you watched 6 games?
No, not that many. I watched like 2.5, 3 games.
Okay. I know I watched the first game they played that day and then a couple others today on replay, and – pace of without going into pace of play, I just want to talk about the actual list. And we did a lot of research for this specific cut because it didn't make any sense to us.
They were first, they were like, what?
First, second, and folks, we need to say this clearly. First, second, and third place in this game were so close to identical that the only difference was one ship. The average difference was one ship and one upgrade. The first and second place, the only difference was a 104th versus Rick Ollie, and first and third was a hull upgrade on Sinker and Clone Commander Cody on Sinker. That's how close these lists were. Also, we should point out that 104th Battalion pilots are still 3 points undercosted.
And these were the only 3 Sinker swarms in the tournament, by the way.
In the entire event.
And they went
1-2-3. We checked who they played. None of them ever played any kind of ace list. They never even looked at a Vader or Fel. They didn't even look at a Republic or Jedi. They somehow managed to go entire events playing things like Tabson shuttle, you know, Kylo, or you know what, quad scimitar Jonas with barrage rockets. Or Pava 3 X-Wing.
The third place list, his opponents throughout his 5 games, because he had a bye, he played 11 arcs.
Yeah.
He played against 11 arcs in his 5 games.
Wow.
This was a blessed run to the championship for these 3 guys. We can't actually... It's very hard to put this into an image, which is why it's going to sound weird for us to say it. All they did was it was like literally putting 2 guys who are all about punching in the ring, and one guy hits a quarter harder every fight. I think it's the easiest way to describe it, right?
Yeah,
right.
Like,
but that's the interesting thing too about tournaments, right? You got to be good and lucky. Not that I don't think that, you know, they wouldn't be able to beat a Vader soon tier list, but I do feel like aces, not that they are needed in a competitive field of X-Wing, but you know, I don't know. Are we slowly slinking back to that conversation about how, you know, raw efficiency, right? Raw untamed efficiency.
Wait. But let's be perfectly clear. At what point did the Gold Squadron Trooper become a high efficient model?
When you've got 4 of them to block, like, right, 2 block and then 2 get the range 1 shot. Turns out, I mean, as Tyler Tippett told you, turns out when your super good AC ships don't get actions, right, they're not as strong.
Except Vader was defending Imperial Aces.
Having six 5-plus hull ships on the board is ridiculous. Some of them rolling 3 attack dice or more. That's not counting range 1, right? Like,
talk to him, Drew.
It is impressive health, and that's why I think that at this point it is the better swarm, the best swarm. The thing is, the reason that Vince and I got talking about this was because I was like, look, I think that this list has vulnerability to aces. And Vince said, well, there's no way they didn't play aces on their way to the 1-2-3. And I was like, Ben, I'm telling you, in the 9 games that are posted on YouTube, none of them are against aces. It's entirely possible they didn't play an ace through the day. And we looked, and none of them, 13 or 17 games played, none of them against aces.
Wow. Wow.
And we're not saying none of them against.
No aces made the finals, so.
Yeah, because the ace was a mirror. I mean, the top table was basically a mirror match. The only difference was, like we said, a 104th Rick versus Rick Ollie with Rick Ollier in an R2.
Or sorry, R2, my apologies.
And the other funny thing is their margin of victory is almost identical. It's 0.58, 0.6, and 0.58. Like, these lists performed almost identical.
Strength of schedule, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Strength of schedule. I mean, yeah, and their MOV is a little different. It's like it's 100. It's 200 points between first and second. So, well, no, actually, that makes perfect sense because one guy just played one game. Two guys played one game more. But anyway, without getting caught up in the mathematics of it, the really interesting thing about this tournament is the number of if not swarms, mini swarms. You look at this list, the first, I mean, the top eight has what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the lists are 5 or more ships. As soon as you go outside of that, you're looking at 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, 5 out of the next 10. Like, this is a swarm heavy meta, and that's who came out of this event. So, Jeff, I think your hypothesis on the aces just beat the crap out of each other might be true. But we also can't dismiss the fact that maybe they just didn't even get close.
But I want to ask you guys a serious question because I never did get to watch any of these games. How many rounds were played during a lot of these matches? Because I would say
the average was 6 rounds. It was driving me crazy, man.
We saw that at our own hyperspace event, and it was kind of like we stumbled upon it, right? Like even the people flying against it and with it, I don't think really fully understood, like, oh my gosh, this is something that I could, you know, legitimately do, and you know, like there's no repercussions for going slow, and you know, rightfully so, you've got a lot of decisions to make, but at the same time, you know, it kind of comes down to that pace of play. And I'm nervous to see X-Wing moving forward, especially with tournaments, if, you know, certain ships are not used and are cheap enough that you can run 6 of them. And, you know, it just takes that one guy who dodged all the aces, right? Like, is that a thing or?
Well, this level of matchup luck will never happen again. This is a statistical aberration in terms of, like, matchups that it defies any understanding of mine. I'm not sure that X-Wing is going to see the same problem with pace of play that some of the other larger scale games have had. I'll put it this way. This is not my first rodeo with this conversation. you could probably imagine, Drew. We started having to put people on clocks. Because it was getting so bad.
I think that a player bears a responsibility to be mindful of it. I found when I was playing a swarm, because it's been a while since I've handled so many ships, I found that I was, if I weren't, was not mindful of it, I would take too much time. And I forced myself. I wasn't saying I forced myself to make bad moves, but I forced myself not to second guess and third guess my moves so that the pace of play was fine in my games. I don't think that it's intentional, but even though I don't think it's intentional, I still think it's unacceptable, at least in terms of the sort of games that I watched in Jacksonville.
I'm just going to do this because I've had this conversation before. You cannot legislate slow play out of any game. You can do everything you can to make it dangerous, but you cannot get rid of it. There are lists in 40K that were holding games down to three turns out of almost required six. Three turns. Because it took these people literally 40 minutes to get through whole turns because they wanted it to take that long. They would do extra spells that had no reason to go off. They would take time to move models so precisely that it would never be necessary to do that because there was no risk of anything happening.
Yeah, like, and doesn't benefit them during the game. They're just doing it to run the clock.
They're just doing it to run the clock. And this happened for two straight editions. And finally, people just snapped and put everybody on chess clocks. People fought against it. There was a lot of pushback. No. We yellow card people in 40K for this now. Like, if you do it consistently, you will be thrown out of events and told don't ever come back. And we still have a problem with it. Because it's almost impossible to, like, quantify slow play.
Right, and these are people that are doing this intentionally, right? Which leads into my next question to you guys. So I play another game, Monster Apocalypse. I don't get to play that often, but for tournaments for that game, they do have a chess clock. So what do you guys think of the idea of splitting an hour and 75 minutes down the middle between both players?
Problem with it is that X-Wing is a game in which both players are acting on the other player's turn.
Right. Okay. Right. Jeff, we've had that exact thing was brought up in 40K. You have all you do, tap the button when it's time to switch.
Okay, but I mean, can't you be switching like eight times in a turn?
Okay. What are you worried about doing? Stressing an arm muscle?
I mean, I don't know. It just seems like it's. It would actually just be more efficient and better if the players would be mindful of it.
And of course, 100%.
And the judges would enforce it.
I'm going to do my best Cenk Uygur impression. Of course! But that's not what you can rely on. Because people will always abuse this. The only way to stop this is that you just put everybody on the clock. And you say, hey, man, when it's your time to do something, you tap clock and you pass it back. That's the only way to solve this problem. You will never erase pace of play problems without either removing those people who are a problem, putting comp restrictions on lists that make it unplayable, which will never happen in X-Wing or any other game for that matter. Or you just go to the chess clock. You have three choices.
So how do you correct things if the clock gets messed up? So like
the clock is both players' responsibility.
Okay, but that's fine. But things are both players' responsibility quite a bit and they get missed. How do you correct it if it gets missed?
You don't. You play on.
Okay.
I think so. So Jeff, here's the other thing too, is that maybe not with like hyperspace qualifiers and like regionals or tournaments ish, but in higher levels of play for X-Wing, like literally since the game's creation, this has been a problem. And I do feel like, you know, as you're saying, right, people are going to mess up when I'm going to say when, because I do feel like this issue at some point will have to get addressed in X-Wing. It may not be, you know, within the next couple of months. It may not be a year or maybe two, but eventually it'll come down to that. There will probably be a chess clock at some point.
It'll come through the FFG app.
Yep. I think it's just going to take time for people to make sure that they don't mess up, right? Like if you forget to tap the clock, you know, okay, maybe when time goes out, you know, oh no, you got an extra 5 seconds or whatever, right? But it's something that you and your opponent must agree on. And that's the other thing too, Jeff, is that you can, you know, both players can tap the clock. But if something really happens, you know, the chess clocks have the ability to be paused, right? Like if there's a dispute, right? So you call a judge.
Yes.
You could agree with your opponent, you pause the clock, and you raise a hand, and nothing is done until a judge comes over, and then play is returned, right? Like...
Jeff, we would love to solve this problem by just people being better, but you and I and Drew all know that's not going to happen.
I have grown to accept that as X-Wing becomes more and more a game of where in order to get respect in the game, you have to win competitive events, that people are going to be willing to shoot angles like this, right? But I'm not. People have been suggesting chess clocks for a long time, and I've never been against them, but I find the arguments against them to be pretty compelling. So I would recommend, for example, just search the FFG forums for chess clock X-Wing or whatever. The arguments against them are pretty compelling, in my opinion. It's not that I care. I mean, I don't really care that much as far as I'm not against chess clocks. I just don't. I don't think that in a game in which there's so much switching back and forth of the responsibility of acting, I don't think. Well, let me give you an example. In X-Wing, we help move each other's ships a lot, right?
Yep.
If somebody is moving my ship on the other side of the board, whose time is going?
It's your ship, your movement. Your clock is going.
He's going pretty slow at it. Not like
if he's taking extra time to do something so simple as put a ship in a template.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, what is extra time? There are legitimately some people who are clumsier than other people and take significant extra time in template to base to template.
That's an argument of absurdity.
Well, hold on. No. It's not. It happens a lot, right? And if your opponent is going slow, hypothetical situation, right? You're in a competitive event. You're playing against somebody, right? They are intentionally going slow when you ask them to move your ship because it's across the board, right?
Not saying intentionally.
Okay, sure. Not saying specifically intentionally, they're just moving slow. A lot of these tables are long, right? I've done things where I've obviously because the clock is running, I have jumped over tables. I have crawled under tables to get to the other side to like move my stuff, right? Or like, check out whatever. I do feel like if your opponent is in that situation, it's best not to put them in that situation and have you move your ship yourself like it says in the rules, right? Like, your ship is moving, your clock is running. If you are asking someone else to move your ship and they are not going at the pace of play that you would like to be at, then you should be the one moving your own ship. Does that kind of make sense? I'm not trying to like call anyone out or like, make it sound like, you don't want to play the game because you want someone else to move your ship. But at the end of the day, if it's your responsibility and you're asking for a favor and that favor isn't being done to your standards, don't you think you should just be the one to move it?
I just think that there's a lot of implications to that you guys are glossing over. I think that if nothing else, what that does is that exacerbates the hyper cutthroat competitive aspect of things.
It doesn't. It absolutely just simplifies and it erases an issue. All it means is that I'm responsible for my stuff. You're responsible for your stuff. There's nothing that shouldn't change any player interaction.
But it does. There is a when players are friendly toward each other, one of the things they do when they're friendly toward each other going both ways is they move each other's ships.
Right, the player we're talking about is not the guy who's going to help you move your stuff. The guy we're talking about is the one who's going to, he's going to make you walk around the table to spend 30 seconds extra off your clock.
These guys in Jacksonville were not doing this on purpose. They are the type of guys that would help me move my ships.
But hold on, therein lies the issue too. Again, because you spoke about it too, Jeff. You mentioned it, right? Like, there is a level of respect and I don't remember the word I'm searching for. Like you're taking a swarm to a tournament, right? You should be efficient in moving all of your ships in a timely manner.
Yep.
You should be efficient. I know that, you know, not that like I know what my friends are gonna bring, right? But like, you know how you have a plan to deal with aces, you have a plan to deal with beef, you have a plan to deal with, you know, the salad, right? Like you should be efficient in those things. And if you are not efficient in those things, then maybe bringing the swarm to a competitive event is not the right choice.
I agree.
Right? Now here's the other thing too, you know, there are tournaments all the time. Right, all the time. I have taken, you know, a list that I didn't think was particularly strong at the time because I needed to test it in order to bring what I actually wanted to bring the next time. So I do feel like that will, again, with the chess clocks, it can help make people be better and more focused and get them more into the game, get them more used to the swarm ships that they're flying, rather than just being like, oh yeah, I just think, what is it, Sinker, 4 Gold Squadron, and Rick. Like, let's do it, right? Like, that sounds cool. Having never flown those ships before, right?
Well, I mean, again, I don't think that these guys had never flown the ships before.
This is true.
There's a problem with when 6 ships are slamming into each other in the middle of the board, the game just grinds to a halt because every single ship that moves, you have to mark 1 or 2 other ships to move the ship. It isn't an intentional thing. It's not even something that a chess clock would help. Basically, with a chess clock, these players would both just run out of time. And the problem is that, so let me give you an example. The game that X-Wing is that has its DNA is Wings of Glory, right? In Wings of Glory, if your plane overlaps another plane, you just replace the base of your plane with a card, a flat card of the same size that matches it, and the two ships are just overlapped. And it's so much faster. The X-Wing is inherently, when ships start crashing together, X-Wing just grinds to a halt. And chess clocks won't help that. They wouldn't help what I saw in Jacksonville.
But they might help with the people's efficiency in flying it, right? Like, okay, if you're flying a swarm, you should know where to mark ships, right? How to mark ships. You should have markers to mark ships.
I think what would actually happen, and maybe this is fine with y'all, I don't know, maybe it's fine in general, I think what would happen is people would just stop flying swarms.
Hold on, right? Is that a bad thing? Now, I'm not saying that swarms should be completely out of X-Wing, but, you know, that would show you that if someone did bring a swarm, they know what the heck they're doing.
That's the nice way of putting it.
I don't think they'll happen. I think you guys are, if you guys are counting on that, I don't think they'll happen. And I don't think that they'll solve the biggest problems of the game, which is unintentional slow play. I'm also kind of curious. So what happens when I run out of time?
I would say it's very similar to, you know, when the clock runs out, right? Or sorry, in a normal game of X-Wing, what's alive on the board, right? How many points? Because the game is built, or at least the points are designed in that, you know, there will always be a winner no matter what. And that's that, right? The clock runs out for one person. Well, that's it. The game is over.
So,
ooh, maybe not though. Hold on. I see your issue. No, as I'm stumbling over myself here, I definitely went too far. Yeah, that's interesting. No, I don't know. It would have to change. It would change the way. So I'll be honest with you. With Mompok, It's like that. Each player has 45 minutes. If your clock runs out, the game instantly ends, and whatever's left on the board, you know, they have their own way of calculating.
And you see the problem with that, right? You see that you've suddenly given one player the ability to decide when the game ends.
Yeah, I don't. Well, you don't have control over your opponent's clock.
But you have control over yours. If the game ends when your clock runs out, see, that's the. I'm not saying.
Someone intentionally staying on their time.
Right.
To run the clock out because they're winning, and then they win because they were already winning when their time started.
Or they're losing, but they've got a fantastic position if only one more turn is played.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely an issue.
That's an interesting question. I'm interested to hear. Listening in on this have some way around that.
When I say that, I found the arguments against it to be pretty compelling. Those are the kinds of arguments that
right,
I'm talking.
Right.
It's that's a decent argument and one that I have not encountered before because X-Wing operates differently.
How do you do it?
Well, in 40K, we just play to it. Like the chess clocks were made to enforce a minimum turn number. If you didn't achieve that turn number, both guys take a loss.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Like literally, that's what happened. Is if both players don't make a certain number of turns, you both lose.
Here's what you could do. You have clocks, right? Also have a minimum number of turns. If the minimum number of turns is not hit, then and there's a significant disparity in the clocks, then whoever has spent more time on the clock gets the loss. Otherwise, it's either a double loss or a draw. I am fine, by the way, with the X-Wing having draws. I just don't want intentional draws.
Right.
I think X-Wing would do with a minimum turn number. It would not be hard to put a fairly safe number on that.
Yeah.
Because the math has been done. Like I saw it mentioned in a couple threads. Aren't most games, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 turns on average?
So in 1E, it was 11 turns. In 2E, it's significantly lower than that. People think the math hasn't been done in 2E yet. My feeling is just ballparking. My games tend to go about 9 or 10 turns in 2E, and I'm a relatively quick player.
I think it's more, but maybe that's because I'm an ace player and a little more cagey. But I almost want to talk to Dion and like work with Gold Squadron to get that number, and I want to test this. I'm actually really excited to try and test chess clocks in X-Wing. With a minimum turn count, just to see how it would go.
It really would not change the game a whole lot as long as you didn't put a prohibitively high number. If you set, like, if we're talking about the problematic lists are playing 6 turns.
Yeah.
All right. The minimum is 8. That's a 75-minute game. 75 minutes to play 8 turns. That's not that difficult. That's more than 8 minutes a turn. Man up. Okay, man up wasn't the right phrase, but grow a spine, all right? Make a decision. Congratulations, you might make a mistake. This kind of thing bothers me because it's absolutely the kind of snake shit that shouldn't be in gaming.
That's the one thing that's interesting about the chess clock too and the minimum number of turns, right? Because now you're thinking, now I'm sitting here thinking, right, if I'm running Soon Tier Vader, how can I beat a swarm in 8 turns?
You have to play you just have to play faster. Like literally, you have to fly faster.
It's interesting because back when the jump masters were a problem, there were ways to put the rocks and like force them to try and like move and stuff like that. And because X-Wing is done in like I move all my my initiative, right? You move your initiative. You could literally in like 8 turns you could map out, right? Like Vader should be here. Right, and you know, Soontir should be here. And I think that that adds a level of complexity to the game that is, to me, is like a, you know, pseudo, right, you know, X-Wing is chess, but like without, you know, the square, the grid. That makes me excited.
I think the reason that things have slowed down in 2E, if in fact it turns out to be that it has, I really think that it has. But I think the reason is that so many more ships reposition now. You know, those, I realize that, I realize that deciding whether you're going to barrel roll is only a 15-second decision usually, right? But if your barrel roll is close to a fail against a rock or something, then that can become 30 seconds or 45 seconds or whatever. There's a lot to like about 2E, and I think it's a superior game in a lot of ways, but I think that they slowed it down unintentionally.
Also, it's a different game, let's also remember that we're literally in month 10. Right. So it also could be true that me and Drew are like patently overreacting, and that this goes away in a couple months.
100%.
You know, 100%. We do have to acknowledge that possibility.
I played a guy tonight who is a super nice guy, but oh my god, so slow, and it isn't. It isn't intentional. It's just like a deliberate. Every single thing that he does, he has to think about consciously. Like, he has to bring to the forefront of his brain, consider it, make a decision, act on the decision, then move down the checklist, bring it to the forefront of his brain. Right?
To be fair, if I flew like that, I think I'd win more games.
I mean, you might be murdered.
I'm just saying, you know, a lot of times, a lot of my problems are I just make snap decisions, or I don't think, and I'm just like, oh, YOLO.
I'm the same sort of way. It's like one of the things that I'll say is, it doesn't really matter.
Right. Jeff,
he is, yeah.
Are they a newer player?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, there we go. I was going to say, in due time, right? Yeah. In due time, they'll get faster.
I don't want to stick on, you know, we've spent a lot of time on pace of play and, you know, unfortunately left the trial behind. Real quick, let's look at the Bellevue hyperspace trial of the game shop, just because somebody took down a trial with a resistance pod literally in the first week. Kovanel, Talisan, and Poe Dameron was your winner there. And that's a kitted out Poe.
What number is this, Fence?
845. It's the second one in the chat. First place going to Eric Riddle, flying Kova, Talisan, Poe. Second place to Justin Brown, whose list we somehow don't have. I cannot tell who was third or fourth between Jake Sheely and Doug Howe. But one of them was Vaderfell Duchess, the classic, and then a new, you know, Hammer and Anvil list that's, you know, Vader Shiranu that I ran into, and God help me if I ever run into it again.
Yeah, you could see that basically that is what that's putting 10 dice on a target and just obliterating it. 10 double modified dice on a target and obliterating it. Yeah.
10? Vader Shiranu was 10 dice? No, I was normally catching...
No. I'm talking about the Kovanel list.
Oh, yeah. No, that hurts. I have been on the receiving end of Prockets in advance, and I've tried it myself. I can't make it work. I just can't ever get that many guns on target.
Here is that these, whichever one needs a reposition gets it into the double modifications.
Yeah.
So that's why that's working. Brilliant. Holy crap. You know, my God.
Well, you look at this too.
What the hell?
You know, we don't have all of the lists. We don't have all the lists for the tournament, but there aren't any like major swarms.
Yeah.
There's the one resistance, but it's black squadrons there's no Jess. And that's, I think, the only one. I mean, you've got the Thai salad. But yeah, no, that's, you know, these are all, it's a lot of ace play, and I feel like you know, Poe and Tally with Proton and Prockets. Like, you know, if you're going to have aces that hit hard, those are going to be the ones.
Eric played Patrick.
It,
right? Patrick lost two ships on the first engage. I absolutely guarantee he lost two guys right away.
It's a five ship TIE swarm.
Yeah.
Without.
I'm hiding. Sorry. Poe roasted somebody on the first pass.
Oh, no.
Talissa probably did too.
Yeah. I mean, double modded.
Because they were going to be both double modded. I bet you he would have had the bid. No, that would have been a slaughter. This is, if you can make Prockets work, you're close to being next level X-Wing. They will overmatch their value very quickly if you can basically use them as a ghetto advanced proton torpedo.
Could somebody please explain these two identical lists using Brilliant Evasion to me?
Jeff, we've given up trying to explain Brilliant Evasion on this show.
Holy crap. Wow, this is...
What the... Four!
What is
five.
Happening?
There's five of them.
Out of 27.
Yeah. What in the world? Folks, let's just be perfectly clear. There are five people at this event running Vader, Brilliant Evasion, Passive Sensors, Afterburners.
And then we're Admiral Charnu with all the same upgrades.
This, you know what? Let's be. I want to be clear. This could be like a glitch. We cannot guarantee that these are accurate list uploads because it sounds too ridiculous to be true.
Well, it is and it isn't. When Whisper Charnu first became a thing in 1.0, it got to the point where my group of friends and I, and this was, we didn't even know about like podcasts and how famous the list was at that point. Like, we discovered it on our own in a bubble, which was kind of strange because, you know, everyone else did too, of course, right? And it got to the point where don't know what to take, bring Whisper Charnu. And if all of us brought it, you know, one of us was going to make it, right? Like, someone was going to get close.
Drew, there's a big difference.
It's true. That was exactly what I was going to get into next, which is, I don't know if 2.0 is like that at all, but I would not be surprised if Doug, Ryan, Matt, Aaron, and Alex are all, you know, fairly decent, good friends, and are like,
Drew, do you think this could have been for the, they might have done this for the memes? Do you think maybe is what happened?
They might have. I don't know. That might have been it.
I want to ask you guys, just to skip over that because it's stupid. Just to skip over that because it's dumb. I want to ask you guys about a specific list I saw this weekend and get kind of your feelings on it. I am not a fan of the Imperial Fives list. I think it honestly is somewhere between C level and B. And you have to be an exceptional player to win a lot of games with that.
So what are you talking about? Merrick, Duchess, what?
Merrick, Duchess, Howl, Mauler, Scourge. I've seen it. I tore it apart. And I'm self-deprecating, but like, I'm also just not any kind of exceptional player. And I had no problem with it.
I mean, I think it's very much a matter of whether it's out PS'd. I think if it's out of knitted, sorry. If it's facing a couple of sixes, if it's facing Vader Sentier, Wedge, Luke with a bid, Poe, whatever, I think that it's gonna lose. But if it's facing fours, it's gonna rip Inferno Swarm to rip it up. Because it's going to get rid of Iden and kill one or two other ships at the same time.
If they all engage at the same time.
Right. If they manage to all engage, which should be pretty easy because it's not a huge unwieldy swarm and they want to stay within one range one of Howlrunner. So they're flying at formation.
But they just fold so easy.
Right. Well, tell me about it, dude. I had eight of them pop on me. I know.
Right. And I mean, like, here's my biggest issue with this list is it doesn't have Iden. If you, like, even if they fly into a TIE swarm, like, congratulations, you killed Iden. You're going to lose two ships for it. Maybe three.
You know, I don't know about that.
to me, it's the efficiency, right? With the Howlrunner swarm, you know, you've got Wampa rolling extra dice. You've got Gideon re-rolling green dice, right? If people are the Del Mico. You know, you've got all these different ties that can do different things. And you're sitting here and you're like, okay, well, Maul and Mithra's got an ability, right? Scourge has an ability. Howlrunner has an ability. Duchess and Merrick both have their abilities. Well, in this list, Merrick is target locking and is focusless on his first engagement, right? All of them are focused. Well, if they have to turn around, much like the Tie Swarm, you know, I don't feel like there's enough action efficiency to get them to be anywhere near as dangerous as they could be in lists specifically designed to help them, right? Like, I feel like Merrick's deal is strong with Vader because Vader is target lock focused. Well, Merrick is just target locked, right? Like, coming into the fight, you know, Merrick is not the biggest target. Whereas with this list,
The Predator?
And also, too, with all the crack shots. Like,
Duchess, right? And Scourge, like, I mean, should both be running Predator to me.
Doesn't have the point.
But there's the thing, too, if there's no points for it, or, you know, you're not going to have crack shot with all five of them, right? Like, coming into the fight. And that, too, I think really subtracts from their power, because on engagement, as we're looking at it, right? Everyone has a single focus. There's no way to mitigate damage or, you know, reroll defense dice or anything like that. You're going to lose one of them on the engagement.
I see that, but I disagree. I think that it would be fairly easy for four of these ships to get their crack shots off. I think they're going to pop Iden and probably kill Howlrunner before Howlrunner gives anybody except herself rerolls. I mean, it's harder to fly than the Tie Swarm in a way, because
much harder.
You really have to be willing to fly straight at somebody to line up the crack shots. But dude, Mahler, Scourge is going to have three dice. Duchess has got three dice. Merrick Steele's got three dice. And they've got the rerolls and they've got the crack shot. That is nasty.
Is it like, I don't know. I have seen other people have been very successful with this list. I think I saw one guy posted that he took down two hyperspace trials with it before the points reshuffle. Maybe I'm running into people who aren't as good with it, but I have never been impressed with it. And I think its biggest problem is just being made. It's even more glass than the Tie Swarm, which is already made of glass.
It is, except that it does so much damage on the initial
engage. If it's flown properly, it has to be.
And if it gets the right matchup.
This list has to be flown in a specific way in order for everything to go off, because as soon as you lose one of them, you know, I mean, obviously Howlrunner is going to be the first target. Maybe.
Oh, I go for Mahler and Duchess.
Maybe. I mean, I'll be honest with you, running the barrage rocket bombers, I was actually really sad about how the strikers just can't deal with the barrage rockets. They died so fast. I was like, oh, there was Duchess and now there's no Duchess, right? Like, wow.
Barrage rocket bomber would die to three shots.
Yes. No, and I'll be honest with you, in the two games that I lost were the games that I let, not that I was like, it was my fault and letting my opponent do this to me, but I knew in order for me to win, I could not let my opponent have three or more shots on a bomber before that bomber gets to shoot. And in the games that I lost, that happened because I flew my ships improperly. It is also largely due to the fact that I just started flying the list recently and, you know, am still getting my bearings on it. But, you know, even so, that is a thing, Jeff, right? Like, again, you know, you're looking at it. If you can get all five of these ships to look at something, the one thing that they want to kill, they will more than likely kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a high skill ceiling list. 100%.
Anything interesting popping out of this besides our winner? I do like to see Trey Jepson, much respect, running the quad black squad with Heroic. I would love to see that list run into the new quad phantoms.
I think that's pretty, I mean, That's a pretty tough list, right? Are they three?
They're fours. They're threes. Black Squad is fours. Four.
That is a tough list.
Man. Again, but it's the efficiency issue, right?
They just
move in focus. They move in focus, and if they're not getting shot at or not getting shots, they target lock, and then maybe they've got a little bit more coming in, right? But like at the end of the day, I do feel like one of the biggest issues with you know these smaller, other than time, right? Other than you know going slow, thinking about your maneuvers and stuff, they just don't have the action efficiency to keep up.
You know, you have to wonder about maybe is heroic going to go up?
Nah.
If heroic is allowing low action economy, not super maneuverable ships to climb up into the top eight with no special abilities, you have to ask, is that too good? And specifically on the defensive end for X-Wings has always been where I think heroic has made the most sense, right?
You were talking before the show about how five X-Wings probably isn't too overpowered. So don't give me four X-Wings and heroic is overpowered.
Five X-Wings doesn't automatically reroll full blank results on defense. Like the amount of swing that provides can be crazy.
Yeah, but no, but
it also happens one in seven times, and that's not counting no, whether it even
averages.
Gets you a
it averages one out of seven times. Don't like let's not. Right. Well, that's not the same thing, and you know it.
Not the same. Yeah, it might only happen one in 10 times, or it might happen,
or it could happen three times in a row.
Absolutely. Are you saying you want to remove things that are random?
No, I'm saying, is it possible that heroic, which is widely regarded as one of the best 1-point upgrades in the game, could it go to two?
Wait, you mean worst, right?
In what world? Who says that?
Oh my god. Okay, hold on. We're going to end this podcast before – we're going to stop this conversation before we go into this, but heroic is garbage. Anyways, moving on. I'm surprised Vince
– See, heroic is not garbage, but heroic is not a 2-point card either. Heroic is one of the best designed cards in 2E, and it is a psychological salve. It is statistically worth what it costs. It's a fantastic card, and I wish there were a version of it for every faction.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I would pay 3 points to put heroic on Wedge.
Then you would be making an absolutely dumbass decision.
Jeff, I roll two blanks with Wedge so often that I would overpay for the ability to bail me out in that situation. Absolutely serious.
You should test your evade dice. You should test your evade dice. Not all dice are made equal.
I don't play with the scrub. That's not fair. I don't play with the core set dice anymore because they were awful.
Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. I do think you should test them, but I do want to move on to the list that won our hyperspace qualifier, and I'm really surprised you haven't talked about it yet, Vince.
Because it makes me feel inferior.
Oh, does it really? I see. All right, well, Jeff, you're going to love this. Are you ready?
Let's
be clear. I did throw it in Sam Cimino's face, Drew.
Okay. I was going to say, did you? Yep. Excellent. So for obviously the listeners and all them. So what won our hyperspace was Lando Calrissian with knee and nub, hull upgrade, and shield upgrade for 15 health Falcon. Nora Wexley with crack shot, shield upgrade, VTG, and ion cannon. All right, and then Thane Kyrell with
Thane Kyrell
and servo motors.
Did not call it.
Yes, Jeff, you know I enjoyed that for about 10 minutes in our Slack chat.
Yep.
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
It's nasty, and it's
so bad talk Thane just because he's a five. I mean, the fact that he's a five makes it silly to bad talk him.
Right. Now, here's the big thing with this list that I noticed was it turns out Big Ship Boost is still really strong. Turns out Big Ship Boost through gas clouds with Lando's ability is ridiculous. Ridiculously amazing.
I don't want to admit in the future I'm probably going to bring gas clouds, but I mean, at a certain point you have to stop hamstringing yourself intentionally, and it's really good to large boost through a gas cloud.
Yeah, it is.
Drew can tell you that I have been bitching about large ship boost for literally 6 years.
Yep.
And they still have not fixed it. It's amazing.
I think probably because large ships are just so natively underpowered comparatively.
But they lessened it though. They lessened the amount of ships that have boost. But here's the other interesting thing too, right? With the, you know, and actually I wanted to end the talks on this too, was, you know, if time and, you know, rate of play or like time of play was not an issue, what other boogeymen are there for competitive X-Wing? Is big ship boost one of them? Is the fact that gas clouds are like virtually, you know, incredibly amazing, like in every way, shape, and form? Are, you know, should they be changed? Should they not be changed? What other boogeymen are out there?
I don't have any real boogeymen that I can think of, other than maybe grappling struts is scary to me based on what I saw.
I'm surprised you didn't say blank dice, but blank evade dice.
Blank evade dice should scare everyone, Mister. I flew Vader into a crossfire of five droids and got away with it.
Dude, my first game against Daryl McMillan, he rolled like 4-3 natty hits on me on Soontir, and I natty evaded out of it every single time. We were crying.
Drew,
we were laughing so hard. It was unreal. It was unreal. It was so funny. And it was so great too, because my name in the tournament was Soontir Fell. So it was like, what the hell is going on?
Jeff. Why are we here, Jeff?
I'm sorry.
Drew was on this show just to flex about how much better his green dice are.
Oh my god. Technically they're silver.
Oh, you're... Yeah, okay.
Oh, I went there. I'm sorry.
I'm not doing it.
I personally just want to say that I think we are doing a pretty good job on making pretty accurate calls on what's going to be good and how specifically it's going to be good. We called Lando in the Falcon. We called a long time ago. We called hull and shield as soon as it had changed to two mods,
and I didn't do it for reasons that escape me.
It's all right.
I mean we're for somebody who went 0-2 scrub out of the hyperspace, man, I'm at least making some good calls on what's good.
Hey, those who can't do podcast.
Exactly, well said.
And on that note, let's go ahead and wrap it up, guys. Jeff and Drew, thank you very much for joining me as per usual. Drew, congratulations on making it as far as you did.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that you have to deal with Rick for the next couple months.
So,
but also, Rick was my first game, by the way, and I had 4 shots on Duchess. Did 1 damage.
Yeah, he told me that he should have lost that game, and like literally from just like all of a sudden it was like, you know, the tables have turned. And he said it was a crazy awesome. It was insane.
There's horrible. Nothing. I think Duchess is one of my most satisfying kills in X-Wing, because people always expect her to do a lot, and I just barbecue her with Wedge instantly every time.
Yeah.
I have that effect on her too. I love it.
Yeah, she Wedge Duchess. Oh Jesus, Wedge has every possible advantage at killing Duchess. It's just crazy.
Yeah. If you fly, the worst mistake to make against Wedge is fly too fast. You will get 1 forwarded and barrel rolled and imploded on the spot.
That was the Jeff. You weren't around for that. We had the joke with Wedge where, like, especially against the Vulture Swarm, he's literally sitting there. You know, he's got one hand on the controls to fly the X-Wing, and in his other hand, he's got a bunch of Vulture Droid stickers. And he's flying with it. He's flying with the cockpit open, and he's just slapping stickers on the side of his X-Wing. Like, there's another Vulture Droid down. There's another Vulture Droid down. There's another Vulture Droid down.
If I, I'll let you guys know when I'm able to do that against a Vulture Swarm, because that is not what happened in my games. But let's wrap it up there. Thank you all our listeners for following and coming back to us again for another week. And best of luck to everyone heading into your own trials this weekend. Good night.
We love you, Cleveland. Goodbye.
Y'all have a good week.
Thank you, Illinois.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.